Confound the man who first found out how to distinguish hours. Confound him who in this place set up a sundial to cut and hack my days so wretchedly into small portions. When I was a boy, my belly was my only sundial. The town's so full of these confounded sundials. That's a Roman playwright from 200 years before Christ was born. And how about another quote about time here? Units of time smaller than an hour were rarely used. They would have had no purpose in a world that moved at the pace of nature. That's from your own James Burke, who I just found out recently is from Northern Ireland originally. Well, we're in our third weeks of our series on margin, restoring emotional, physical, financial, and time reserves to overloaded lives. And for today, we're focusing on time. And in regards to time, an overloaded life, overloaded living could be defined this way: someone striving to be all things to all men, all at once, all by themselves. Do you know anybody like that? Well, I had to learn the hard way about time, and I guess I didn't learn it well enough the first time because it had to happen again to me. Back around 2002, I had my young family with me, and we were involved in several ministries. And I was a full-time manager of a busy restaurant serving about 500 guests a day, and oftentimes not getting home till about 1 a.m. in the morning. And at the same time, we were at this place, at this seminary, where I was a full-time graduate student earning my master's degree. And on top of all of that, it wasn't enough for me. I had to sign up for some extra independent studies because I just needed to pack as much as I could, you know, into the time that we had there. And after doing this for a couple of years, I burnt out. Now, how do I know that I burnt out? Well, my marriage, for one thing, was certainly not skyrocketing in any sense, and that was mostly, you know, my fault because of all that I was involved in. I hardly ever had time for my son, and I was getting behind in my graduate work as time went on, just more and more behind in my studies. And one day I finally got up the courage to go make an appointment with one of my professors who I owed a lot of work to. And I intended just to go in there with one sole purpose, just to ask, could I have a little extra time to get this paper in that I owed him? It was due, I think, in about a week after that appointment. And so that was my expectation, to go in and see him. But as I went in and he asked me, you know, what he could do for me, I just broke down and started weeping uncontrollably. And I didn't know where it was coming from. And he just patiently, you know, was a gracious presence for me there. And eventually, after I calmed down a bit, you know, he could ask me what was going on and what's wrong, you know. And so I eventually, you know, just unloaded everything to him. And in God's providence, this particular professor was not only a counseling professor, but he had spent his whole career before he went to teach, his whole career ministering to pastors who had burnt out. And so he, probably better than anybody else on campus, was the person that I needed at that moment, and who could minister to me, could understand where I was coming from, and so graciously helped me walk through a plan so that I could put aside some things, swallow my pride on a lot of accounts, and begin to rebuild some margin back into my life. And things were good then for a number of years, but as I said, you know, some of us don't learn the first time around. And so about 5 years later, I was working at a busy parish. We had about 1,200 people every weekend worshiping with us. And my rector then at this church became appointed as the bishop of a new missionary diocese to form a whole new diocese of churches in the United States. And I was tasked with setting up all the infrastructure for that new diocese. And we quickly grew from one parish to eventually almost 100 parishes. I was putting in, between work at the church and work for this new diocese, I was putting in, on an average week, about 70 hours a week. And there were several weeks every year when I was putting in over 100 hours a week. I was literally living at the church day and night. And again, the same things happened. Our marriage started to struggle again. I hardly saw my family. I had hardly any sleep. And the way I describe those particular years is I felt like I was a hamster, you know, going around the wheel, you know, like hamsters do. And I just couldn't get off the wheel. And this time, burnout looked like this. So I was going around the wheel. I wasn't getting any sleep. My family relationships were struggling. And then what really woke me up, though, is one of my staff members left my staff. And on a very brief exit interview, I asked her, "Why are you leaving?" And she says, "Because I come in here week by week, and you never use me." I was going that fast around the wheel, I did not even have time to stop to see how could I use the people and resources that God had already put around me. I was trying to be one of those people of doing all things all by myself. You know, it's kind of like this. You know, in our lives, we're given one candle to burn. If they even light up sometimes. Sometimes our candles don't light up. You know, we're given one candle to burn. And some of us are satisfied, you know, with one candle burning like that. And we let it burn and, you know, we watch it eventually, you know, the wax slowly, you know, melting away. But some of us aren't satisfied with that, you know. So some of us, you know, we don't want it burning on one end, do we? We want it... we want it burning on both ends. And you know what happens eventually if we burn our candles that way? Well, pretty soon there's not going to be a candle, is there? Everybody, all of us, every single one of you is here. We need at least four types of time in our lives. We need personal time because we're not designed to live on empty tanks. We need family time because our young children, our frail parents, and our loved ones who are struggling were never designed to have to take care of themselves. We need neighbor time or time for other people because none of us are an island unto ourselves. And we need God time because we weren't designed to live apart from Him. Dr. Richard Swenson says this, that societies that have the accelerator to the floor are doomed to become godless. I want you to think for a moment about all the time-saving inventions you've got in your home. Just think of some of the things you've got in your home that's supposed to save you time. And let's ask ourselves, with all of these benefits in our homes, are we advancing God's kingdom any better because of them? Do any of these inventions actually help us to love God any better? Do any of them help us to love our neighbor any better? Do any of them help us to love ourselves any better? Or are we only being further distracted from how God wants us to use our candle? Dr. Swenson also says this, that obedience is often not schedulable. Margin is not a spiritual necessity, but availability is. That's worth repeating. Obedience is not often schedulable. Margin is not a spiritual necessity, but availability is. So the test, or one of the tests, for whether you've got enough time margin in your life is this. If God placed an interruption in your life today, would you have the availability to respond? Would you even notice that God was trying to interrupt you on your way? Or would you be too busy and stressed out to take notice to what he was trying to do? A pastor has said this, that it is possible that the most important thing God has for me on any given day is not even on my agenda. The most important thing God might have for you today could not be even on your agenda. And just like with emotional health and physical health, the last couple of weeks that we've talked about, either we manage our time or it will manage us. So let me just outline briefly a few practical steps to try to create some freedom and availability for the purposes of God. First of all, build in some margin in your diary. Add an extra 15 or 20 minutes before you schedule something in your diary so that you've got some extra time before that engagement. And then on the tail end of it, add in a cushion of some more time so that you have some time between what you just finished up and what you're heading towards next. And pretty much in all of these recommendations, do as I say, not as I do, okay? Establish some boundaries in your life. Learn to say no and to not feel ashamed or embarrassed to say no. And for the things that you've already said yes to, get your shears out and start pruning back. Part of that is maybe finding out all of the monkeys that we talked about a couple weeks ago, these things that people come along and they throw your way without really consulting you or getting your full agreement to do that. And they throw these tasks and delegated things your way. You know, figure out who all these monkeys that are crawling on your back belong to. And then go find their rightful owner and say, I think this monkey belongs to you. This one's your responsibility. I know I kind of took it on my back, but I am now giving it back to you. I haven't been taking good care of it, and it is now back in your cage. Thirdly, realize that the story of Martha and Mary that we looked at a couple jam Sundays ago, that story is not just a nice Sunday school story that we say, oh, isn't that nice, you know. Yes, we should all be like Mary. We nod our heads, but then we go on living like, you know, Martha, don't we? It's more than just a nice, sweet Bible story. More is not always better. Busyness does not equal holiness. The value of people is not in how busy they are or how productive they are. Fourth, if you've never done this, do yourself a favor and start jotting down how you're spending your hours day by day and week by week. Start keeping a log, and you'll start seeing patterns and habits that you never realized were there. And when you see it on a piece of paper, or when you see it on your computer screen, on your calendar, then you can start to see, oh, this is what I need to prune. This is what I need to sort out. How do I get rid of this thing? Get it down so you can see what the problem is. And then finally, ask yourself how much time you're spending on taking care of your house, on taking care of your car, on taking care of your clothes, on taking care of all the stuff that we all fill our lives with. The more stuff we've got in our lives, the more time is stolen from our lives. Again, Dr. Richard Swenson, we serve the God who exalts faithfulness over productivity, rest over speed. The same God who invented time in the first place and reserves the right to set the rules for its use. God never intended for time to oppress us, dictating our every move. That was progress's idea. Instead, time was simply his way of making sure everything didn't happen at once. A hard lesson for some of us to learn, including myself, is that rest is not idleness. Margin is not being lazy. Jesus said, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. Jesus sought times of solitude, and he wanted his followers to also seek solitude so that they could have personal time, so that they could have God time, so that they could be available for God's purposes. Knowing all this, why would we not rest? If God is this way, why would we not choose to be people who relish and cherish and celebrate our times of rest and times of margin? You know, God commanded the Israelites to rest once a week, every seventh day. God said, as recorded in Deuteronomy by Moses, "Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and Yahweh your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." Now God does not waste words, does he? His words are recorded for us and passed down for us for a purpose. Each of the commandments that God gave us, he must have given those to us and to his chosen people because they needed to hear what he had to say. Because presumably they were behaving in ways that didn't naturally conform to the way life was supposed to be lived out. And so he needed to help incline their arms. Let me know if there's a fire down there, okay? And so he had to tell them once a week to take a break. There must have been something. I don't know what it was, but there must have been something in the Israelites' culture while they were slaves in Egypt. There must have been something in their DNA that caused them to not take a break once a week. I don't think it was simply because they were slaves. Maybe it was the Protestant work ethic. I don't know. But there was something that led them to idolize being busy. Otherwise, God would not have given them this command. And Ezekiel picks up on this centuries after Moses. God speaks through Ezekiel and says, I commanded the Israelites to respect the Sabbath as a way of showing that they were holy and belonged to me. But they treated the Sabbath like any other day. Their eyes were set on their father's idols. There was something about the Israelite fathers. There was something about the people when they were still in Egypt where they were idolizing being busy. Maybe they got some pride out of helping the Egyptian empire build all the wonders of the world. Maybe it was already part of their culture before they went down into slavery in Egypt, where they so prized being productive farmers. I don't know what it was, but it was something inbred that was hard to get rid of. But God wanted them to set aside a day of rest to show that they were his people and he was their God. To show that their success in life didn't depend on working 24/7, 7 days a week. To show that their success could still happen even if they kicked back for a full 24-hour period, allowed God to be God, and allowed themselves to not be God. We're going to be slaves. We're going to be slaves to work and to the desire to be productive if we don't take Sabbath rests. Psalm 127 says this, "It is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep." Now, by the time we get to Jesus' day, centuries later, the Jewish religious leaders overcompensate by turning the Sabbath laws into burdensome rituals. And instead of the promise and the commandment to take a Sabbath break being a gift that brings rest and restoration to people, it becomes a burden to their lives. Now, that's a sermon topic for another day, perhaps. But let me just focus in on the gift of the Sabbath rest. And let me just say, by the way, that the Sabbath is not Sunday. The Sabbath was and is the seventh day of the week. But we are not Jews living in the Promised Land, and so the law does not literally apply to us. We are in the New Covenant. But I think the application still applies in the sense that we all need to find a day in the week when it works with our lives as they are, a day in the week that we can set aside to enjoy God's Sabbath rest. But what is the Sabbath rest? The Sabbath rest ultimately is not just about setting aside a day in our week. The Sabbath rest also points us to something greater, as does most, if not all, of God's commandments and ways for our lives. It points us to the rest that we will have on the other side of eternity. Sabbath it's a sign that just like we don't earn our success here on earth, so too when we get to heaven, we don't earn our rest in salvation. We don't earn our eternal rest. That depends on God and what he has done for us. Hebrews says this, "There remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, just as God did from his." You see, just like God rested after he created the universe in 6 days, And then he tells us we need to rest after our work of 6 days. So too, in the end, we need to come to a place of ultimate, eternal rest. And the only way we do that is not to strive after it and to earn it, but to allow God to be God and to simply receive his gift of rest on this side of eternity and the next. Let us close once again with words from David. Yes, my soul find rest in God. My hope comes from him. Truly, he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I shall not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my rock, my refuge. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart to him, for God is our refuge. Amen.